The book of Proverbs is a book of wisdom given to us to help us to navigate life. One of the crucial difficulties that we find in life is the problem of temptation. Temptation, interestingly enough, was one of the only negative thing to be found in the Garden of Eden. Satan tempted Eve and her husband Adam to sin. Now, temptation in and of itself is not evil. We know that Jesus was tempted in every way as we are, yet was without sin. On the other hand, the Bible does make it clear that to tempt someone to evil is itself sin. Since that first act of temptation in the Garden of Eden that caused man to fall from his position of sinlessness and fellowship with God into a state of sinfulness and separation from God, mankind has constantly been encountering temptation. It should not therefore surprise us that within the book of Proverbs we are given wisdom that helps in the area of temptation. In preparing for this message, I came across the slogan, "It's easier to avoid temptation than to resist it." But the question is, can you avoid temptation? Is it actually possible to avoid temptation? I suggest that it's not. But that we can and should minimize the possibility of our encountering temptation. Indeed, I think that that is the message of Proverbs. That the wise person will seek to avoid temptation, will minimize the risk of encountering temptation, will not simply throw his hands in the air, shrug his shoulders and say, "I cannot avoid temptation, therefore why bother trying?" Rather, a wise person says, "Though I know I will encounter temptation, I will not walk into it knowingly." In Proverbs 22 and verse 3, we have a proverb that is repeated almost word for word in chapter 27 and verse 12. And it speaks to this issue of minimizing temptation when it says, "The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it." You see, a wise man recognizes that there is danger all around, is constantly on the watch for danger, and hides himself from it when he sees it coming. That doesn't rule out the possibility of a wise person being taken by surprise. But it does mean that he's aware, on his guard, and in an attitude of readiness to avoid that which can be avoided. chapter 14 and verses 15 and 16 tells us, the simple believes everything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless. And so Proverbs indicates that wisdom seeks to avoid temptation. Wisdom is cautious. Wisdom is careful. Wisdom is watchful. Wisdom is ready to run. So how then? How can we minimize the risk of falling into temptation? Well, one way that the book of Proverbs presents to us is in relation to the company that we keep. And firstly, it says we should avoid bad company. 1 Corinthians 15 and 33 really sums up what the book of Proverbs has to say about this. It says, bad company ruins good morals. In other words, the friendships that you develop have an influence on the way you yourself think and live. You will be influenced in your behaviour, in your language, in your thinking, by the behaviour, language and thinking of the people who you make your friends, whom you associate with, whose company you keep. John Crotts, in his book Craftsmen, where he explores different themes in the book of Proverbs and applies them to the leadership of a man in a home, brings out six different types of company that the book of Proverbs says we are to avoid. Firstly, there's a general category of evil men. Chapter 24, verses 1 and 2 speak to this, when it says, be not envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their hearts devise violence, and their lips talk of trouble. You know, wicked people, as the writer of Psalm 73 points out, often live a prosperous life, free from many of the troubles that other people encounter. They can seem to live well, to have everything that heart desires. And it is possible to become envious of such people. Indeed, the psalmist in Psalm 73 says he had become envious of the wicked. And it almost caused him to slip and to slide off the way of righteousness. But these people have hearts that devise violence and lips that talk of trouble. We shouldn't want to be with them, because the things that they talk about, the attitudes that they embrace, are in direct opposition to what the Bible teaches are good and righteous thoughts and words and attitudes. We ought not to desire to be with them. Indeed, we ought to avoid the company of such people. In the second place, we are to avoid the company of gossips. Chapter 18 and verse 8 tells us, the words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. Gossip is interesting. Gossip is enticing. It tickles our ears.
We love to hear a bit of juicy gossip. It's like a delicious morsel. But just as a morsel of food goes down into the inner part of the body, so gossip infiltrates our very core, the very core of our beings. It permeates there and it begins to infect. And that infection spreads and begins to corrupt.
Chapter 20 and verse 19 says, "Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a simple babbler." Don't go in the company of gossips. Of one who talks too much is another way that that last phrase could be translated. While the term slanderer could equally well be translated as gossip, because that is ultimately what gossip does. It slanders, it undermines a person's character as stories are told. Avoid the company of gossips. Avoid angry people too. Chapter 22 and verses 24 and 25. "Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare." You see, bad company ruins good morals. You keep company with an angry man, you'll become an angry man. You'll learn from him. So that his failure to guard his tongue, his inability to keep his emotions in check, will become an example for you that either consciously or unconsciously you will begin to follow. You will begin to let down your guard. You will begin to allow your emotions to have free rein. And you will end up being like him. "Have no friendship with such a man," the book of Proverbs warns us. And then in chapter 23 and verses 20 and 21, it warns against keeping company with drunkards and gluttons. "Be not among drunkards, or among gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber will clothe them with rags." You keep company with such people, again, the idea is that you will begin to live like such people. They give free rein to their appetites. And so we could actually take this beyond that of eating too much meat and drinking too much wine to encompass any kind of appetite that is given freedom, is never kept in check. It might be an appetite for the latest gadget. It might be an appetite to indulge in computer games. You see, it could be any kind of obsession that takes over. Such a way of living is detrimental to one's spiritual well-being. It isn't conducive to living a righteous life, but rather distracts from it. And so we are warned, do not be among such people. In the fifth place, the book of Proverbs tells us that we ought not to become the friend of a thief. In chapter 29 and verse 24, The partner of the thief hates his own life. He hears the curse, but discloses nothing. The idea here is that not that the partner of the thief is necessarily involved in a burglary, but that he knows about it and doesn't disclose it. In the Old Testament, to know about a sin and not to disclose it was to participate in the sin. To keep silence when called upon to give testimony was equal to being involved in the crime. Keeping friendship, you see, with a person whose own life is contrary to God's will and ways brings the temptation of involvement in that person's sin. Your friendship with such a person overrides the truth and the speaking of the truth. And then in the sixth place, John Crox points out that the book of Proverbs explicitly tells us that we must avoid the sexually immoral. We've already considered that because a number of the extended discourses in the first part of the book have a lot to say about sexual immorality and avoiding the sexually immoral person. We don't need to go there again, but I do want to quote from Crox, who says, "Many guys who would not dare to go naively to the street corner of an adulteress gladly go to her website. Unfortunately, her website leads to the same hell as her house." You see, just as Jesus himself taught, to have lustful thoughts is as bad as immoral behaviour. And so the book of Proverbs very clearly tells us that there is certain company that ought to be avoided in order to minimise temptation. You know, there'll be the temptation to envy the wicked. But if you surround yourself with wicked people and are constantly confronted by their prosperity, the temptation to live as they live will be that much greater. There are times when we cannot avoid the words of a gossip. But to willingly and knowingly surround you with friends who are habitual gossips will inevitably open you up to the same temptation that you would not be open to the same degree if you guarded your friendship circle and avoided attachments to those who were habitually addicted to this behaviour. And the same then can be said for angry people and drunkards and gluttons and thieves and the sexually immoral, you see. We may not necessarily to be able to avoid every instance of temptation, but we can certainly minimise it by avoiding bad company. Now, what's the counterpart to that? Well, of course, it's to embrace good company. And the book of Proverbs is probably more implicit in regard to this than it is explicit. We've already observed a number of times that the book of Proverbs has a tendency to emphasize avoiding the negative and leaving it implicit that we embrace the positive. And so we find it
to be true here as well. Yes, we are to avoid bad company. Example after example after example is given to us in the book of Proverbs. And yes, we are to embrace good company. But here's a couple of verses that explicitly point to that. And the clearest is chapter 13 and verse 20. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Walk with an evil man, you will adopt patterns of wickedness. Surround yourself with gossips, inevitably you will become one of them. Keep company with angry men, and you will lose the ability to control your temper. Go where drunkards and gluttons congregate, and you will become like them. Make friends of thieves, and you will be tempted to lie. Walk in the ways of the immoral, and you will fall. But keep good company. Walk with a wise man, and you will become wise. His example will be your guide. His habits will become your model. His behavior will guide your behavior. His words will colour your vocabulary. His aspirations will become your goals. Walk with a wise man, and you will become wise. Chapter 11 and verse 30 tells us that the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. The second clause there is difficult to translate from the Hebrew, according to those who know Hebrew. I'm not sure from what I've read on it that the ESV has necessarily got the right idea. It seems to have been influenced, as Tremper Longman suggests, by the modern idea of winning souls. Whoever captures souls is wise. He suggests that a wise person saves. In other words, that a wise person's lifestyle, a wise person's influence, has an effect upon those around them. So implicitly it's telling us that we ought to surround ourselves with wise people, so that the influence of their lives might have a mark, an impact upon our life. So that their righteous living will be a guide to us in our living. So that their faith, their worship, their service of the Lord will be a model for us to follow. And in emulating them, we may find ourselves on the road to righteousness, on the way to life. Avoid bad company and embrace good company. And then, really coupled in with all of this, of course, is the idea that we need to develop discernment. Indeed, that is really one of the characteristics of a wise man. We've already encountered this as we began our study this evening in terms of the need for care. In chapter 14 and verses 15 and 16, the simple believes everything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil. In other words, a wise person, a prudent person, has discernment. They don't simply accept everything. They don't take everything at face value, but they weigh things up carefully. And they choose on the basis then of this careful assessment. And this means then that as we develop discernment, it will influence not only our choice of friends, but our choice of circumstances as well. You know, it's not enough just to avoid bad company and embrace good company. There's more that needs to be done. We need to recognize that there are other things that can influence us. Thorns and snares, chapter 22 and verse 5 says, are in the way of the crooked. Whoever guards his soul will keep far from them. In other words, we need to recognize who we are. We need to recognize our own weaknesses. And we need to set up defenses. That is discernment. We need to know ourselves. Where am I vulnerable? What are the particular ways in which the evil one seeks to tempt me? You may have a particular appetite for gossip. But you're no glutton when it comes to meat. You may drink in sexually provocative images, but have no taste for wine. My point is that you need to know yourself so that you can avoid circumstances in which you may become particularly vulnerable to temptation. Some people may be able to go into a pub in order to witness for Christ and have no temptation to drunkenness. Whereas for someone else, it would be the last place on earth that they ought to go. I'm not suggesting that the pub is necessarily the best context for witnessing for Christ. But it may open up doors of opportunity, depending on who your contacts are. The point is this, that we need to know ourselves. We need to know our own weaknesses, and we need to set a guard, to use the language of chapter 22 and verse 5. And keep far from those things that would cause us to stumble and to fall in the way. Now there's two things that I want to say in closing. And that is, first of all, that temptation will inevitably strike. But temptation isn't sin. It's giving in to temptation that is sin. Jesus was tempted, but he resisted and remained without sin. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 13, Paul tells the Christians in Corinth, "No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it." In other words, there is never, ever an excuse for sin. Whatever the temptation may be, it isn't inevitable that you must give in to it. There is always some way of escape. Knowing that is possibly half the battle. You know, often we are tempted and we actually want to give in, don't we? We don't even look for the way out. But we must. Immediately before that, Paul wrote, "Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall." So easy for us to be overconfident in ourselves. Paul says, "Therefore, because of this, flee." Flee whatever the temptation may be. Flee whatever your particular weakness may be. Flee whatever particular sin may be standing in your way. But if you fall, John reminds us that if we confess our sins, God is faithful to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. 1 John 1 verse 9. The gospel gives us hope in the midst of temptation. It promises us the strength to endure temptation. It tells us that sin is no longer our master, so that we must inevitably obey its will. And it encourages us that when we stumble and fall, God is able and willing to pick us up, set us on our feet, dust us off, and help us once again along the way to life. Temptation. Can you avoid it? Probably not. But according to Proverbs, you can minimize it. May God help us to be discerning and wise, to look for danger and hide from it.